Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You are now entering a critical thinking zone. Thinking caps are required beyond this point. From deep behind enemy lines, deep in the heart of the Midwest, it's your host, Andrew Coppins. And it's time for critical thinking.
Hey, Pat, do you smell something? It smells like a fryer bubbling. And old fashions being poured, or in your case, a kitty cocktail.
Gee, thanks. Gee, thanks. Just because I don't drink, you know.
Well, appreciate. I was also going with your baby face, Pat.
Baby, I have a beard.
Right, but the rest of you look like you're maybe 20.
I look like I'm 20?
Sure, I mean, yeah.
Gee, thanks.
Yep, you're welcome. I'm paying you a compliment. I said that you had a baby face, that you look younger than you are, and you took offense to that?
I mean, now that you've clarified, no, I don't take offense to that.
Good grief, Matt. But yes, that smell of the fryer, that smell of old fashions in the mix. That means it is a Friday here on Critical Thinking. Yes, that's right. Follow us on the socials, which you can see below us on our Rumble live video. Well, live at 10 a.m. Central Time. But anyway, live for you that are viewing it for the first time. But yes, you can see all of that wonderful goodness there, where to follow us. We've got all of that there for you. And of course, thank you so much if you are listening via podcast. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening or watching, we thank you so very much. Make sure over the weekend, by the way, to tell one individual, at least one individual, about the show. Just grab their phone and put it into their podcasting app. Just do it. Trust me. It'll be good. Now, all of that having been said, Pat, it is the Friar. It is almost the freaking weekend. And I thought, you know, why do we need to... why do we need to go political all the time on a fryer, right? On a fish fry Friday. Yeah. So I saw a great question. And so what we're going to do is each of us gets a non-political question to ask of the other person, and we shall discuss from there. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go first on this very first non-political questions?
Why don't you go first?
Okay. So this one is out of left field, if you will, but I think this is a very interesting question. Your tombstone can have only a single movie quote. What does it say?
Oh, you son of a... Damn, that is a hard, hard question. So I'm going to answer this two different ways. Because I am such a Star Wars fan, I think I would have to go with the classic line of do or do not. There is no try.
There is no try.
But if I'm going to go outside of Star Wars, I'm going to pick a line from one of my favorite movies, and that's going to be, the line would be, get busy living or get busy dying.
Mm.
So that's from Shawshank Redemption for those that don't know. So, that is a tough one. I mean, and depending on the day, I could easily come up with some other ones. but that is a tough one, absolutely a tough one.
Yeah, so you stole the one that I would put, which is,
are you serious?
Is the Yoda quote. Yeah, do or do not, there is no try. Yeah, that's absolutely that sums up kind of my spirit, period. I believe that, you know, trying doesn't get you anywhere.
Right.
Now, you either commit to doing something or you don't. If you half-ass it, that's the point of that quote, right?
Right.
The other one that I think would be absolutely apropos for me is... Give me one second. I need to find it just to make sure I've got it correct. Is this quote.
Uh-huh.
Are you trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
What movie is that from?
Major League. Que paso there, Pedro?
I saw that bits of that as a little kid. But
que paso, Pedro? And now, Pat, there's another one that I had really considered here because I think it would be absolutely hilarious in the dry humor that I have. It's just a flesh wound.
Oh. excuse me, but...
what are you going to do? Bleed on me? Mm-hmm. Get back here!
There's another good one that I really like. It's everything's impossible until somebody does it. And that's actually a quote from Batman.
Fair enough.
So
the other one that I was thinking of is also from Deadpool. I'm about to do to you what Limp Bizkit did to music in the late 90s. but I would definitely go with something irreverent and funny, and I think either the Star Wars quote for seriousness or are you saying Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Wow.
I would love to, like, honest to God, I thinking about that, could Jesus Christ hit a curveball? I would assume so.
I would assume so. I would like to believe that he can do anything he wants.
Right, but is he also not of the flesh, right? Meaning, is he not just as fallible or potentially fallible as everybody else? And isn't not being able to hit a curveball a fallibility? These are the theological questions I want somebody like Steve Dace to answer. In fact, buy, sell, or hold, Jesus Christ couldn't hit a curveball.
That actually could be a really, really funny question to ask them.
I think I'm gonna put that into the buy, sell, or hold for them next week. And by the way, yes, we are absolute friends and fans of them, because we are friends with them. So yeah, I'm gonna have a little bit of fun with them next week.
That would be a funny one.
Buy, sell, or hold, Jesus Christ, or Theology Thursday, Jesus Christ, could he hit a curveball? All right. That having been said, Pat, it's your turn.
All right. So, just because, you know, we decided to do this morning, I'm going to go with a relatively easy one. And that is, you know, with it being summer. Well, actually, no, I'm going to do this one instead. If you could move anywhere out of Chicago right now, where would you go and why?
This is a really, really tough question. And this is a question that my wife and I have pondered quite a bit, honestly, because we look for both the economic and the social freedom, right?
Right.
I don't know that you can find it anywhere. I don't know that you could. Singapore could be an area that you would look to for the economic freedom, right?
Right.
At one point in time, I would have considered New Zealand for the economic freedom that they do have. But given the COVID-19 lockdown situations in both of those countries, no way, no how.
Well, that's true.
Now, if I'm looking here in the United States of America, I would have to say Arizona might be a target for myself. But I would also consider the Nashville area or Indianapolis. Those would be the two areas that I would look towards. Okay, here's why. My wife and I both like the urban lifestyles. We enjoy living in a city. And I've said this 1,000 times over, and you've heard this, Pat. If I wanted to move to the suburbs and have this 3,000 square foot home with an acre of land and all this other junk, right? Why would I have left Green Bay, Wisconsin? I could get it for half the price, right?
Right.
So why would I have done that? Like, there's no point in me doing that here.
It's also stupid, cold in Green Bay, Wisconsin during certain times of the year.
Right, but it's also home to the greatest football team ever created. So
it's debatable, but all right.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it really debatable, though, Pat? Think about that. Is there a team that's won more NFL championships? The answer is no.
By the way, the New England Patriots
and all of the Super Bowls they've won, still half. The Denver Broncos and their $4 billion from the $4 billion plaything from the Walmart error.
You might be one of the few people that actually looks at national championships, though. I think everyone kind of counts Super Bowl wins now.
Sure. But there's a whole almost 50-year history of the NFL prior to the Super Bowl. And first of all, how many teams have won back-to-back championships in NFL Super Bowl history? The answer is like, what, two?
I was going to say 49ers and the Patriots.
And the Packers. Super Bowls 1 and 2. And on top of it, they're the only ones to win a trifecta of NFL championships in a row. They won 65, 66, and 67.
Before my time.
Obviously. So. And I get it, different era. But they're also the only team to win in the 60s, in multiple decades, like four decades, I think, right? So it'd be in this in the 30s, 40s, 60s, 90s, 2000s, or 2010s. Depending on how you count 2010, the 2010 Super Bowl.
I would count those the 2010s.
So 5 decades they've won championships in. That's consistently great football, considering they've been around for over 100 years now.
Fair enough.
I mean, 1921 to 2022 or 2020. That's the hard part, the 100th anniversary of the Green Bay Packers. And technically, it's 1919, but they only count the NFL version for the NFL. But we were professional, just not a member of the NFL before that in 1919. But that's neither here nor there. I would just say this. For me, though, I look at the ability to live a semi-urban life if you wanted to, or an urban life in which things are less like bat nuts crazy. And while Nashville is more liberal, right, it is not as crazy as Chicago. You still get the best of the urban lifestyle. You could also live in like Franklin or Smyrna or other areas around Nashville. And right. You don't have the income tax. You don't have some of the economic stuff. And they are, as a state, more socially conservative. So there's that. Indianapolis is similar. I think it's one of the, if not the most underrated city in the United States of America.
It's also a pretty big sports town.
It's a massive sports town. If you're a fan of the Big Ten, living in Indianapolis is a great location. It's easy to get to places, and most likely you're going to be able to watch your team play at some point in time in that city.
That's true.
Or you just go to West Lafayette or Bloomington to watch your team play. You know, play Purdue or Indiana. And you're not that far from the Cincinnati area. You're not far from Louisville and Bourbon Country. You're not far from
Columbus.
Right. You're not far from Columbus. You're not far from Champaign either. You know, so the point that I'm making is that, like, those are areas that we would consider. But ultimately, it is almost an impossibility. Because the other part for me, well, what about Florida? What about Texas? Have you seen Texas and how purple it is? Have you watched... I wouldn't want to live in Austin. I wouldn't want to live in San Antonio. I wouldn't want to live in Dallas. I wouldn't want to live in Fort Worth. About the only place I would consider is Waco. You know, so I look at those things. I would consider Des Moines myself, but I don't know if that's where we'd want to go. You know, trading basically the same climate for the same climate, if not worse, because of the openness of Iowa versus a little bit more of the hills that we have here in the Chicago area versus the flatness of the rest of the state of Illinois. Yeah, I just name me an area. Okay, Florida. Okay, great. Well, guess what? For me and all the health issues I have, that is not a healthy place for me to be. The bugginess, the swampiness, the humidity that is Florida. No, thank you.
That's why you chose Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona or parts of southern Utah where it's much drier, or parts of southern Colorado where it's much drier, it's not as humid, would be an ideal place. But again, the problem is look at the politics, look at the social structure, look at what they can offer in terms of entertainment, lifestyle, those types of things. At the end of the day, it is almost impossible to find it. You have to almost create it for yourself. You know, and you almost have to go and find a small community that will foster that economic and social freedom.
Fair enough.
What about you?
If I were to move outside of Utah?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, we've talked about it at different times. You know, if things happen with careers and stuff like that, where would we go? The Dallas area of Texas is one. And one of the reasons why Texas is because of my wife's career.
Mm-hmm.
And also because, you know, my radio career as well. If that ever took off, that would be a place to go. But Texas is a much more friendlier to the right. family and consumer sciences. So it would actually be a decent place for my wife to find a job and make a decent living. We've talked about the Nashville, Tennessee area as well. That's also one of those places. If they weren't so bat nuts crazy and so expensive, San Diego, California. Love that city.
Yeah. I visited once very briefly for like 3 or 4 days. And it's a climate-wise, weather-wise, that is like a paradise all year round.
Yeah. That's why. We really love it there. That's actually where we went on our honeymoon. So we really enjoyed San Diego quite a lot. And then if I ever had to go back to the Midwest, probably the Indianapolis area, just because everything is so close.
Now, one area that I would definitely consider moving to foreign-wise, even though I don't like the politics and some of the stuff, Germany. In the like lower Bavaria, Austria, like Tyrol region of Germany.
Right.
Oh my God. It's beautiful. You have a great sense of being able to get out in nature. You can hike, whether or not that's, you know, grueling hikes or easy hikes or strolls. But the people of those areas are so amazingly genuine and generous and fun. I would totally love to live in those areas. That's an area we've considered if we wanted to retiring into those regions.
Yeah, we've if we ever moved out, I mean, for my wife, it's Italy, just because that's her heritage, and for me, it's either Dublin, Ireland, or London, England.
I just can't deal with all the rain and bull crap that they get. I'm good.
I mean,
I'd actually take Chicago over London in terms of city level.
Oh, in terms of politics and stuff? Oh,
no, yeah, not just politics. Like the actual culture of the cities and the actual like, it's a great, London's a great city, but Chicago, the food scene's better. There's just a lot more to like about it. But anyway, I think it's a fascinating question for people to consider, because take a look at your politics, take a look at your economic beliefs. Panama might be an area that I would also consider because it is much more economically free than America is. I don't trust its politics necessarily, but there's a really good expat community there. Portugal's another place to consider from a economic standpoint. And from an expat standpoint, the climate is great there. But take a look at all of these places and go, is there a place in the world that fits your either libertarian belief or your belief in social conservatism or your belief in economic freedom and free markets? It is impossible to find the mix. It really is, even here in the United States of America. And that's my whole point in this exercise. Sit down with your significant other. Sit down with your family and think about those things. And try to come up with a place that you would want to live. It's almost impossible. We've done it for years. It's just craziness. So, I think those are interesting questions. Now, that having been said, I think it's also time for another interesting question. It is time for us to play the bee or not the bee. All right, Pat, lay that headline on me one time, at least.
Victims of Communism Museum set to open in Washington, D.C. to honor over 100 million people killed by Marxists. Victims of Communism Museum set to open Washington, D.C. to honor over 100 million people killed by Marxists. Is this the bee or not the bee? That is the question. While you're thinking about that really quick there, Andrew Coppins. Folks, if you haven't gone to American Pride Roasters yet, please go to AmericanPrideRoasters.com. They are up on a very limited standpoint, but they are slowly getting life back to normal. DM is back to making at least some things on a limited basis. So if you would please support a good, small, local business that makes a great product, great coffee, even though I don't personally drink coffee. Mm-hmm. I stand by Andrew's testament of this.
Hey, I don't claim to know what great coffee is. I just know that these are great people producing good coffee, at least. Ooh, at the very yes. least, it's good
at very,
coffee.
At the very least. So go to AmericanPrideRoasters.com. That is AmericanPrideRoasters.com. Now,
I have an idea. Maybe Dave can come visit Chicago sometime and let me know how to taste coffee and discern between good coffee, great coffee, everything in between. Just an idea.
It's probably like wine tasting.
Yeah, or a cider tasting, which I'm going to be able to do this weekend thanks to my wife for our anniversary. Because we do opposites, meaning I do the modern anniversary gifts and she does the traditional, and the traditional for the fourth year is fruit. There you go. I'm not supposed to be drinking much in the way of beer, so, gluten and all that. We're going to go to an actual hard cider place here in Chicago and do a full tour and tasting. So that's going to be fun. But anyway, it's called Right Bee, by the way. It's really cool local place where they actually have like a honey harvesting place on the top of their building. Mm-hmm. And it actually started as like a place to do honey, and then it decided to get into cider as well. Really, really cool place. So excited to do that. I haven't been there yet, but I've had plenty of their stuff. Now, question for you.
No.
The way you read that headline, it made it sound like there were victims of the Communist Museum.
Do you need me to read it again?
Do you understand what I'm saying, right? Victims of Communism Museum. Wait a minute. Wait a tick.
The headline reads, Victims of Communism Museum set to open in Washington, D.C. To honor over 100 million people killed by Marxists.
Yeah, and it's probably closer to about 125 to 150 million if you actually take the full scale of Marxism in the 19th and 20th century. So I'm going to go with this being not the B.
Are you sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
You would be correct then. This is not the B.
And good for them to be opening this in Washington, D.C. Good for them. Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, and actually the museum was founded by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which was authorized in a unanimous act of Congress and signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1993. How far we have fallen since then. The foundation is currently headed by Ambassador Andrew Bremberg, who served as U.S. Permanent representative at the United Nations in Geneva from 2018 to 2021. Bremberg said the museum was urgently needed because public surveys show a general acceptance of socialist and communist ideas among young people. The foundation raised millions of dollars from concerned citizens to rehabilitate and build out two floors of its building located at McPherson Square within the view of the White House. The museum seeks to honor the more than 100 million people who were, and counting, who were killed by communist regimes like the Soviet Union, China, Cuba, North Korea, Venezuela, etc.
And what about all the people who were just murdered by all the Marxists who were just protesting? All the May Day killings, all of that sort of stuff that had happened in the 1830s and 1880s and 1890s. Yeah. It's probably closer to about 125 million people.
Yeah. I would imagine from what I'm reading here that would be included somewhere.
And I hope to God that it's right next door to the National Holocaust Museum.
Well, that would be good.
I really do, because I think
that would be relevant.
I think people need to understand the two are almost side by side, because really why Russia was on our side is because they were fighting two sides of the same coin. National socialism versus Marxism. That's what was, you know, communism versus socialism was the fight on that side of the war.
By the way, have you been to the Holocaust Museum before?
Yeah, I went to the Holocaust Museum. Now, this was a very long time ago, when I was in eighth grade. We went to the National Holocaust Museum, and we did the adult side of it. Because there's two sides, by the way. There's a kids section and the regular adult museum. And they got us into the adult side.
Yeah, we did the same thing, except I was in sixth grade.
That's a lot to take in as a sixth grader. I don't know that. I don't know if I would do it to a sixth grader.
I can tell you this. Once was enough.
Right.
The only time I think I will ever go back to that museum is to take my own children.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would go back as an adult. And then also, you know, as an adult, I've seen a concentration camp in person, you know. So I went and saw Dachau when we were on our honeymoon/anniversary trip. We went to and took a guided tour, like with an actual historian helping us guide that. So it's like things that we learned, like that most people wouldn't about Dachau, like why the memorials that exist at Dachau are in the order that they are when you look back at the concentration camp or look from the concentration camp to them. The Catholic memorial is dead center. Why? What the story is, all, you know, all the Jews that were killed in the Holocaust and all that stuff. Well, at Dachau, that's where Catholic priests in Bavaria were slaughtered at just unreal numbers. More Catholics died at Dachau than Jews.
Huh.
So it's very interesting. Now, that having been said, all that darkness having been said, I think it's time for us to, I don't know, crown a brand new Richard of the Week. I don't know about you, but when I hear that sound, I always think of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good representation of that. I would agree.
Now, I also thought of another line from that movie that I would consider. And that's, bring out your dead. Right on my own tombstone.
See, I thought it would be something like, we are the knights who say, nyeh!
You shall bring us a shrubbery. Is that an African or a European swallow? Well, yeah, European swallows are non-migratory. Oh, that movie is so fantastic. Run away! Run away! All right, that having been said, Richard of the Week, the nominees, Pat.
The nominees are going to be Joseph Marionette Biden.
Now, do we have a clip for this one?
We have a clip for the Friar.
Okay, then let's not play it.
Yeah. We'll play that for the Friar. But it does ultimately stem from the same source of when he goes on to Jimmy Kimmel and essentially just sits there and babbles on forever and gaslights America.
Yep.
As he has been for a while now. We also have Joy Behar, and I believe we have a clip for this one.
Well, let's save her until the very end.
So, okay. And then we also have
Vladimir Putin, because last time I checked, he's still at war with Ukraine.
Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then we have the Brett Kavanaugh dude.
Yeah, there's nothing more Richard-like than breaking multiple laws in pursuit of, how dare you decide to save human life, right? How dare you decide that human life has value regardless of whether it is pre-born, born, or 55 years old, right? How dare you? So you know what I'm going to do, Pat? This is the thing that bothers me about this, right? So you know what I'm going to do in pursuit of making sure that that babies are not born? I'm going to murder you. Nothing says I'm not pro-murder like murder. And driving right. from California, committing multiple felonies. In fact, the last time I checked, if you drive from California to Washington, D.C., you've crossed at least 20 states to do so.
I'm going to have to count that sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at least 15 to 20 states. Think about it. You've got to go California to Arizona. So that's two states. Uh-huh. Then you go New Mexico to Texas to Oklahoma to potentially Tennessee, West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, DC isn't a state, but you get the point.
I'm fairly certain there's a few more in there. But
right. There's yeah. also the potential to take the southern route, which would take you through Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama and up, you know, through that direction. There's multiple ways that you could do this. You could take the Route 66 right. route. I don't know. Was he into the scenic stuff? I have no idea. But there is literally nothing more Richard-like than, I don't like your ruling, so I'm going to murder you. But beyond that, we have not covered that story because here's the deal. We had things that are also important in our lives and in the lives of America, including the gun battle and all of that stuff going on. But Pat, I want to ask you this. Is there anything more insane that could happen this year than somebody attempting to assassinate a Supreme Court justice?
I mean, to me, I mean, you could put this up there on par with Vladimir Putin, in my opinion.
And then secondly, my second question to you is this not one of the biggest and most historical stories that should be told about our time?
Oh, absolutely it should.
Will it ever be told? No.
Probably not.
Nope. This will never appear in a history book. Never. In fact, I will bet you there's at least 25 to 30 million Americans out there right now who have no idea that Brett Kavanaugh was nearly assassinated. Think about that. And why? CNN buried this. If you went into their feed, okay, on CNN.com, it was story number 30 when it happened.
What?
The New York Times put it on its front page. The actual physical newspaper?
Yeah.
It was the very bottom of the front page.
I mean, at least they put it on the front page. That's better than CNN.
No, it's not, because 29 other stories were ahead of it on the front page of the New York Times.
Okay.
Okay, so it was equally as buried.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you went searching for this in the mainstream media, would you know about this?
Probably not.
Now, why is that happening? Well, because to people like the Justice for Ruth or Ruth, whatever, it's like a group of pro-abortion activists and whatever. This is the group that's been leading the Kavanaugh and everybody else rallies and protests outside of their homes, right? They think that that's a justifiable position, right?
Right.
Well, guess what? This is the inevitable end of all of this, right?
Right.
This is what happens when you don't cool the temperature. This is what happens when Jen Psaki refuses to say, no, these protests are wrong. This is wrong. We need to cool the temperature of this debate. We understand the passion. We understand the emotion of this. We understand that both sides of this have very deep-rooted opinions, very deep-rooted beliefs on these issues. But this is wrong. Drawing that line in the sand was not Jen Psaki's thing. In fact, Jen Psaki encouraged it. Jen Psaki in the White House. Joseph Marionette Biden's position, by the way, on this, from the mouthpiece of the White House, Jen Psaki, Jimmy Psaki's older sister, by the way, she told the world all of this was okay. The reason that CNN is burying this, the New York Times is burying this, that you're not going to hear this story on CBS or MSNBC or CNN or anything is because this would shine the spotlight on the utter depravity that has existed in these groups. It would shine the spotlight on, oh, wait, maybe we, uh-oh. But it also doesn't fit their narrative, right? It's only the right-wing nut job that would get this highlighted, right? If this was a right-winger attempting to do this, right? We all know the whataboutism, right? And I'm sick and tired of the whataboutism. But I'm also sick and tired of the left gaslighting America on these topics. I'm sick and tired of it. Now, it also does what? Proves their gun control advocacy to be dead in the water. Why? Because what happened here? You and I are not afforded the armed security and the detail of protection that Justice Kavanaugh and his family are afforded right now.
Right.
And are afforded most of the time, by the way. But it was because of that armed presence, right? That overwhelming presence of force that was in front of them, that this individual literally got to the block and called the cops on himself, noting he was not going to live through this, right? Called the cops and said, hey, I'm here to kill Justice Kavanaugh. All because of the presence in front of him. Because of the realization that his plan was never going to work. But if it weren't for that force, we might have had an assassination of a sitting justice of the United States Supreme Court.
Has that ever happened before in the history of the country?
I don't believe so.
I don't think it has.
I don't believe so. I could be wrong, but I don't remember that ever happening. All because people like Jen Psaki and the leftist groups believe that their political victory is more important than life. Ironically, people who are, we're not about murder, we're about the life of the mother, would have snuffed out the life of the mothers of all of the children of the Kavanaugh family in support of their right to choose. Murder. Now, this also highlights the fact that criminals don't care about the law. Because how many laws did this criminal break, Pat? Let's see. Attempted murder, threatening a federal official. Oh, that's right. Carrying weapons across state lines against law. At least 10 to 15 times, by the way, that you could charge that, depending on the route that he took to get from California to Maryland.
I'm assuming there's going to be all sorts of traffic violations, too.
Right. Not to mention you probably broke a number of laws about what you can and can't own and what how much ammo you can and can't have in the state of Maryland, not to mention all the other things. I'm going to guess that the charges amount to probably about almost 100 by the end of all of it. If they wanted to, they could charge him with almost 100 different crimes. Did he care? No, not one bit. It doesn't fit into the neat little narrative that right-wing extremism is the problem. And I'm not here to suggest that Jen Psaki personally is responsible for this. I'm not here to suggest and do the things that the left would do to the right. What I am here to suggest is that this is the byproduct of increasing the insanity on this debate and on this topic. And it is the responsibility of the White House to act in a responsible manner, to not flame the rhetoric, to not flame these things, to be the adult in the room. But I'm not against having the fight, right? I'm not saying don't fight. I'm not saying don't get into the mud. There's a difference between getting into the mud and saying, you know what? I think it's a good idea to go ahead and protest outside of the homes of federal officials. And Chuck Schumer getting on TV the other day and suggesting every day he's got protesters outside of his house. The absolute gall and gaslighting that goes on. And the inability of the White House, we strongly condemn the... Oh, now you do? You were perfectly fine with everything up to that line. What did you think was going to happen? What do you think was going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? Furthermore, this is also a John Roberts problem. This should have been something that John Roberts and a bunch of other individuals, mainly John Roberts, though, decided to do what, Pat? He should have decided to have released that opinion immediately after it got leaked. Release it. This is the opinion of the court. Boom. See you later. Instead, he's let it fester and fester and fester and fester. We still don't have it released. What's the holdup, man? What you waiting for? Somebody to try to murder? What will it take for you to release that opinion? What will it take? Somebody to actually murder? Well, oh, wait. Then that justice can't issue that opinion. What the hell is going on with these people?
I can't even think of a reason why you wouldn't release it by now.
Unless that's not the actual opinion, or unless you think you're going to gain some leverage somehow over the investigation into who leaked it. If that is the opinion of the court, release the damn thing. You're not doing anybody any good.
I was going to say,
here's the rub. The faster you do it, the sooner people move on. Because here's the issue. Most people in America will get into an uproar one way or the other for a couple of days, a week, whatever, right? And then they're going to realize, oh, crap, I can't take a trip to visit my family in another state because I got to pay $6 a freaking gallon for gas.
Yeah.
Most people are going to realize, oh, wait, I can't afford to go into work this week because I can't afford the tank of gas.
Dude, rip the Band-Aid off.
Yes. What are you waiting for? You incompetent piece of crap. He is the most incompetent Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court in my lifetime. I think he's only the second. But he is easily the most incompetent and arguably the most incompetent since the 1930s. What you doing, man? What are you doing? You're going to get one of your justices killed.
Yeah, rip the Band-Aid off and move on.
So, that having been said, Joy Behar is also on this list. So, let's go ahead and hear from Joy.
The Republican Party already has said, many of them, that taking those AR-15s off the market is a no-starter.
Okay, let me just say this real quick. Can I just say this real quick as a gun owner?
Yeah.
There are people in this country that genuinely own guns and just do so for the same reason that we all sit up.
An AR-15?
No, let me tell you. Okay, let me give you a story. There's a man in Connecticut that watched his neighbor have a home invasion and watched their whole family get killed. He built his own AR-15 because Connecticut won't let you buy them, but you can abide by rules that allow you to build them. And then he has one in his house to protect his family because he never wants to see that happen again. He is a black man. It's odd. Most AR-15 owners are former military, okay. 35 plus.
Let me
and
say
married.
One more thing.
So that's all I'm saying,
okay.
Is that they're not these crazy people.
Okay. Here's the thing. Once black people get guns in this country, the gun laws will change. Trust me.
That is the most insane thing. She said that to literally a black person standing in front of her having a conversation, telling her, I am a gun owner.
How much more racist, by the way, can you get?
Now, 1 in 4 households, 1 in 4 black households in America, according to recent studies, have guns in them. Legally owned guns, by the way. That doesn't even include all of the gangbangers who have illegally purchased guns. And either that's the most racist thing, or she is advocating for taking away guns from black people. What?
In which case, it's still racist, by the way.
Right. There's no way around that being absolutely 100% racist. She literally just flippantly said that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Pat. Part of the Jim Crow law was black people couldn't own guns. Part of the government apparatus in the 1960s was to disarm the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
Who controlled the government in both instances? The Democratic Party.
Democrats. Yeah.
So this is just in keeping with Democratic policy for evs. So you're going to disarm? What are you saying? What are you saying? America says black people can't own guns? The only people who have ever said that in the history of the United States of America have been Democrats. Not a single Republican, not a single person that is not racist believes that to be an apropos, an appropriate thing. Because here's the rub. Living in the city that I live in, if you live in those neighborhoods that are rougher and you are not a legal gun owner, you're nuts. That's my stance. You're nuts. I would suggest arming yourself so that you have the ability to fight back against the criminality in your neighborhood. The armed robberies, the shootings, every weekend, every day in those neighborhoods. You need to be able to defend yourself. You really do. Legally, of course. I would encourage gun ownership. In fact, I think that 1 in 4 number is probably low. And more, because why? They don't trust government. They don't trust telling the government they own guns, right? They don't trust the government, period, point blank. I mean, your reaction was my reaction. The first immediate reaction was, what in the racist bullcrap is that? In the gall. This is the white woke crowd. They think they're more black than the black person sitting right in front of them. They have more right to tell a black person what black people should and shouldn't do than a black person in front of them.
I mean, the more I think of this, I mean, it's almost like Joy Behar is saying the quiet part out loud when it comes to the history of being a Democrat, apparently.
This is the history of eugenics. Yeah. This is the history of Margaret Sanger and the progressive thought movement,
right?
The Frankfurt School movement of the early 20th century. This is just the extension of that. These people, Joy Behar and her ilk, were taught the Frankfurt School, were taught these things growing up. And they've been able to do so throughout academia over the last 50, 60 years. These are the things that are taught. How do you control the population? Disarm them? So what? So that the next time the government turns on this population, right? Because it has happened throughout history in America. The next time, we don't have guns. That was the whole point of Jim Crow, was to disarm and disable their ability to become part of society. The whole point. For you to suggest that the other side of this, wait until black people have guns. No, I don't know a single gun owner who wouldn't encourage people to own a gun if they wanted to for their own protection, for their own safety against the government, whatever it is. Don't know anybody who wouldn't do that. Again, this goes back to that mentality, right? This goes back to, this is an ingrained mentality that they know better for black people than black people know for themselves. Black people are just too stupid to know this. That is what they firmly believe. And if they had their druthers, I guarantee you they'd go down the route. You support abortion, right? What does abortion do? Kills more black babies than any other population in the United States of America. 70% of black babies get killed in this country every year. What was the goal of Margaret Sanger? We can go on and on and on about all of this. This is the most god-awful thing I have ever heard come out of her mouth. And that is saying a lot.
She said some pretty awful stuff before.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, are we ready to crown a new Richard?
Yeah. I mean, is there any doubt that the Richard of the week is the Kavanaugh shooter or potential shooter?
I personally would put him on par with Vladimir Putin. So, yeah. Yeah. I think we could go with that.
Yeah. Anybody who wants to attempt to assassinate a Supreme Court justice, you're a Richard. Congratulations. You're a brand new Richard of the week. And again, we don't use the names of these people because there's no glorification and there's no right to your name being put out in public, in my view. But having said that, though, guess what else time it is, Pat? It is time for the Friday Fish Fry. That's right. It is time for the fryer. Mr. Padone, the first story to go deep into the fryer this week.
Well, since we were talking about Joseph Marionette Biden, we might as well go into a couple different things here. We talked about him being on Jimmy Kimmel the other day. Do you want to just go ahead and play this clip first?
You often get asked, look, the Republicans don't play it square. Why do you play it square?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If we do the same thing they do, our democracy will literally be in jeopardy.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Not a joke.
And I understand that argument, but also it's like you're playing Monopoly with somebody who, you know, won't pass go and won't follow any of the rules. And how do you ever make any progress if they're not following the rules?
Well, you've got to send them to jail, you know. There's that little box directly to jail.
You got that little box. I got that little box. This is a technique presidents have used for a long while, right? I would go back to Bill Clinton, right? The late night circuit and make yourself look cool and funny and hip, right? That's the whole point of this.
But then also saying the quiet part out loud.
I mean, that wasn't funny, right? Like, it was supposed to be funny. They get it? They don't pass go. You don't even get your analogies, your stories, your allegories right there. The actual story there should be that they're the ones that pass go and don't allow you to pass go. Right? That would be the point, right? They just continuously magically pass go. And if you don't get the $200. They keep the $200. They don't tell you that you pass go.
And if they had their way, they would just put you in jail.
Right, exactly. Right. That would be the correct thing to do here. But my God, man. My God.
Yeah.
This interview was so cringe. This interview was so bad that even Jimmy Kimmel lobbing softballs, even trying to like nudge him in the right direction, right? Or whatever. Literally trying to save him. Like, hang on a second, though. Let's go to commercial or whatever. Like in the middle of his incoherent, unintelligible ramblings. At one point in time, Pat, they literally just had to cut to commercial because he was just rambling on. Like there was just a hard cut to commercial. Now, mind you, this is a taped show. This is not live. This is taped. That's how bad this interview was.
And they couldn't even cut and dub very well to save this.
This was awful. This is the person that's supposed to lead us from the brink of economic ruin and disaster, right? We're supposed to believe that this is the individual that has the leadership skills to do these things, right? Just nuts. Just absolutely nuts. Now, also, you can make the argument this is the puppet they wanted to make sure that economic ruin happens, and oh, voila, democratic socialism is in play. You can make that argument. I've largely made that argument that he has always been a puppet, and notice how they cleared the field for him, right? And suddenly 81 million people, I'm still supposed to believe that 81 million of our fellow Americans thought this guy was a wise decision. There ain't no way in hell that's true.
No. But then again, last election is the first time I think I've ever seen hate voting be successful.
I don't even know if it was hate voting. It was hate rigging the system.
Well, that too.
I mean, if you haven't followed what's been going on in Wisconsin and the clear issues that with chain of custody and all that sort of stuff, you need to pay attention to that. If a state like Wisconsin can be like that, holy Moses. I shudder to think what Pennsylvania, Michigan can look like, mm-hmm. Illinois can look like.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. And it's also a good reminder of why we need the Electoral College, because if they can just cheat their way to winning the Electoral College, what the hell do you think is going to happen to a quote-unquote national popular vote? There ain't no way a right-leaning individual will ever win the presidency ever again. It would never happen. Ever.
Nope.
It is the buttress against that you must fight. And it's there because that's supposed to be the way. But anyway, so while we've got Matthew McConaughey lying on the podium of the White House press secretary, stage, we have this senile old man getting in front of the American public. Again, what has been my thing? Hide him, because every time he talks, he looks more insane. Every time.
Oh, and it hurts you in an election year too.
It does no good. None.
Yeah, it does no good.
The reason they won in 2020 is because they knew how to rig the system legally, right? And they hid him as often as humanly possible, because every single time he got in front of the camera, he screwed up. You ain't black if you don't vote for me, right? All of the racist tropes, all of the things that he would say time and time again. It's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. But we're not done with the amazing here, Pat, because we talked about the Joey Behar situation, right?
Right.
Now, we also talked about the school shootings and gun control. There's an individual that, of course, pops up every single time. That gun controls in the
Hogg kid.
Yes. David Hogg decides to lie, to gaslight the American public into believing that Marco Rubio wouldn't have a conversation with him, and therefore he is afraid of gun control or compromise or some weird thing. Except for when you've got the receipts. And you know, and they know that you're full of crap. You probably shouldn't tweet that out. What did David Hogg tweet out? Well, on June 9th, Rubio staff said, "I can't meet with him or his staff because I quote unquote trigger him. I just want to have a conversation. Please meet with me at Marco Rubio. I just want to figure out how we can stop these things from happening. We have to end the continuous debate and find what we can agree on." Michael Nedham happens to work for Marco Rubio. "No one said such a thing. As for this meeting, you must be confused, as we had a 2 p.m. meeting scheduled with you today. However, since you are lying and clearly using this for self-promotion, that meeting is now canceled." And then went over the top rope, put the elbow drop down. "Also, the reporter doing a profile of you knows the meeting is real since she was emailing yesterday with our comms team about it. Don't lie again. We have receipts." Here's a shocker. David Hogg, a few hours later, at Marco Rubio, "An honest mistake. Got our meetings confused in the flurry, and my staff misinformed me." Oh, so you're guilty of misinformation. "I apologize. We'd still love to meet with you and have an honest, respectful discussion. Deleted the tweet because it wasn't true, but attaching here for transparency."
So, in other words, it's better to look like you're stupid than look like a liar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Unreal. All right. Any other stories into the fryer this week, Pat?
Well, you know, we do have the letter to the DHS secretary, which highlights new terms from Biden administration's Ministry of Truth.
That's not a Ministry of Truth, Pat. It's just a disinformation governance board aimed at, not the American people, by the way, aimed at foreign actors, headed up by an individual who, wait for this, Pat, in 2019 was the information director of Vladimir Zelensky's campaign. Wait. He's the president of
Ukraine.
And what's Ukraine notorious for again, Pat?
Corruption.
And disinformation.
Yeah.
So, but we were supposed to believe this was just an innocent governance board aimed at giving them guidance, right? To fight and combat that in foreign countries.
Wait, what's that? There's a document that says there's a private-public partnership to do this to American people?
See, this is the thing that the FBI, if you pay attention to, and the NSA, right? When they tell you they're not spying on you, what they really mean is, we're not spying on you. We're just hiring people to spy on you, and they're just giving us the information. And that's not illegal, right?
Uh-oh.
It's not illegal for private companies to do it.
Mm-mm.
And it's also not illegal for them to say, here you go, NSA. We're just innocently dropping this off. We have no idea what's on here, by the way. None.
So you say disinformation governance board, I say Ministry of Truth.
Right, but that wasn't... Nah, there's nothing wrong with this.
By the way, Republican Senators Chuck Grassley, which, by the way, needs to retire.
Oh, God, he's terrible.
And then Josh Hawley of Missouri called on the DHS on Tuesday to provide additional clarification regarding its policies and procedures for identifying mis-, dis-, or malinformation, as well as its efforts to operationalize public-private partnerships and its steps it's taking to ensure it does not infringe on the constitutional rights of Americans.
No, Pat. They would never think to do what the FBI and the NSA already do. They would never do that to the American people. Your freedom of speech is paramount.
Are you sure? Because the commission, according to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, refers to information based on fact but used out of context to mislead or manipulate.
So are they going to muzzle the White House? Because I can't think of a space or a place or a group of individuals who peddle in mis and dis and malinformation more. The greatest example, we talked about it this week, right? 80% of Americans feel that they're satisfied with their personal financial security, right? Yeah, sure. October of last year, they felt that way. How do they feel now? Oh, wait, the Federal Reserve isn't taking that study. And it took a whistleblower, by the way, to tell us that this governance board, sure, it was wink, wink, going to be dissolved, right? It wasn't going to exist. They were just still going to go ahead with the same idea, just we'll do this with a private company that we hire. And on that note, Pat, your final thoughts as we head into the weekend.
Don't get lost. Remember who you are. No means no. And Joy Behar is racist.
Please be smart, be safe, be kind, have yourselves a great weekend, and as always, Matthew 5:47.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay. And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.